Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is powered by DEN Certifications. You want to deepen your practice or supplement your knowledge for your day-to-day job? You'd be surprised to know how many certifications we do offer. All levels of Reiki, intuitive healing, compassion, animal communications, and of course, our deep 400-hour meditation teacher training program. Go to denmeditation.com and look under certifications for more information. Welcome to DEN Talks. This is Tal Rabinowitz, your host and founder of DEN Meditation. Today we have Ara Katz. She's co-founder and co-CEO of Seed. It's a company that combines scientists, doctors, innovators, entrepreneurs, and storytellers from around the world, and they research and promote the potential of the microbiome. Don't worry, we explain what that is later. Basically, they're raising the bar in bacteria and not only educating us in the process, but they're creating incredible products that benefit us all. They've started with their male and female symbiotic, which is a probiotic and prebiotic together. Now, why are we doing this episode? Because the microbiome is essential to our health and happiness and balance. This all connects, and I promise it's going to make sense. She is the smartest woman. There's no other person you'd want talking about this. She came from the world of film. She started multiple tech businesses, and through a dark moment in her life, which we do chat about, she switched careers and came up with the idea for Seed. Look, her brilliance does not go unnoticed. She was named in Marie Claire's The New Guard, the 50 most influential women in America. She was listed in Business Insider's Silicon Valley Top 100 and also their 36 rockstar women in New York City Tech. She's an impressive woman. And she has the ability to break down what the microbiome is in a digestible way, no pun intended. And she explains how it affects so much of our health, immunity, gut issues, skin, hair, and possibly even depression. She gives us tangible takeaways, I promise, on how we can balance our own ecosystem and also the things we can pay attention to or eliminate that actually harm it. We also dig into how science can be spiritual and is spiritual. She has such a beautiful point of view on the world, the importance of asking questions and letting things constantly evolve. She empowers you not only to question what's being presented to you on the science front, but in every aspect of your life. By the end of this episode, you're going to want their probiotic for sure. And the good news is they're offering our listeners a special promo code. So just stay tuned in the episode. We give you all the details. We hope you enjoy this conversation. And if you want to continue it, please join our closed Facebook group, DEN Talks Podcast. I get to sit here with Ara Katz. She's been known as a serial entrepreneur. She's a mom of a three-year-old and now co-founder of Seed, a company that believes in the potential that the microbiome can change human and planetary health. They're not only creating products that are on the cutting edge of microbiome research, but they're determined to educate the consumer as well, which is what I love. Because it's not just like, hi, I'm an entrepreneur, I want to make money. This is like something you actually believe, and you're like, I want to change how people think about this, and I want people to understand it. So let me just say right up front, I know some of you are probably like, yeah, I totally get microbiome, and other people are probably like, what the fuck is this episode going to be about? Let it be known, I'm really not educated in this world at all, so I will be asking questions. Some of them might be dumb, but hopefully that'll help you guys actually stay involved and know that I promise you we're going to like simplify some stuff because Ara's amazing, and she's one of the most brilliant people I've ever sat with. So let's talk about that, though, the fact that you are so passionate about this from a personal place as well, and it's twofold. It's A, personal of what you've learned. You've always been kind of attached to kind of the science and health, just part of life and how it affects you. And then also on that you've also been very much about empowerment and understanding, so teaching people. But let's start with the personal as far as like how you even started getting attracted to this area, because in your entrepreneur world, this wasn't always where you lived.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful place to start. I think first of all, my mom died when I was 17. I remember printing out clinical trials in my high school computer lab.
Oh my God.
And trying to kind of make sense of what it means to be trying to address something, a pathology in this case, cancer, pancreatic cancer, and understand where the science is while also watching a human kind of go through pathology and watching what happens to a human body when you get sick and what happens when, you know, you have, it was kind of interesting because it was like the perfect dichotomy of there'd be Reiki healers coming through my home while we were also trying to figure out like clinical trials. And so my mom had a really interesting like openness to Eastern medicine. And I think that often comes when you get to a place of desperation, which is why I think a lot of functional integrative medicine doctors, you know, a lot of people discover autoimmune things and gut health at the end of a very long journey of struggling to figure something out about their bodies.
That's so interesting.
I think it's like a
last resort.
Last resort. And then also it's why so many of these, a lot of the more Eastern or functional integrative doctors kind of end up being the knights in shining armor or the lights at the end of the tunnel, because even if they don't have all the answers, they've been oriented around quote unquote like gut health for much longer than a lot of like Western medicine has been. Unfortunately, Eastern, you know, but of course that was paired with not really understanding it on any kind of scientific level, but it was more rooted or grounded in, you know, Chinese medicine, orientation around the gut or the doshas that come from Ayurvedic medicine. Or even some, you know, even back to Hippocrates, who said all disease starts in the gut. So I think there was always this notion that there was something kind of in there.
But it's so interesting we've steered. I mean, it's just like, I mean, I love talking about science and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's so interesting we've steered so far away from it. Just like,
yes,
same thing with like religion and spiritual talk as well. And now all of a sudden we're all getting back there in all the industries. I feel like people are starting to pay more attention again.
Yeah, you know, I still think, and I'll go back to your other question of how I got, you know, got here, but I still think there's a really interesting thing that's happening in the spiritual world and the people who, look, I think the greatest disease that we're all suffering from right now is confirmation bias, which is you find a modality or a framework or something you want to believe about your body, the way you want to be in your body, the way you want to treat people, the way you want to be in your life. And you seek out only the things that continue to reinforce that framework, that modality, that belief system.
And it's so easy to do that now because information.
That's how algorithms work.
Well, algorithms. And there's so much information. So you Correct. Can literally, and you're not going to read everything because no one has the time.
Yes.
So you're only going to read what pleases you.
Yeah. And I think, or what makes you feel safe. Right. So.
And this is on like every level.
Every level.
Saying.
So I mean, whether it be about. It's how we elected our president.
Yeah. So whether it be political, whether it be dietary needs, wellness, or like you said, if you're nutrition, sick and you're trying to figure something out about getting better. Or a religion.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, I always say science is actually like the most spiritual practice. And I sometimes find like the more modern forms of spirituality dogmatic and actually not spiritual, or I should say not integrous with what I believe with some of the original intentions of spirituality, particularly if you look at like Buddhism, for example, which has like really a practice of non-attachment. Well, science in the scientific method is this idea that you have an idea, you have a hypothesis, you are not attached to the outcome. You create and construct a set of conditions under which you can test an idea, a compound, a treatment, something psychological, I mean, any number of things. And then you observe with a number of data points the outcome, and then you draw some conclusion and or iterate and decide whether or not more observation or investigation is needed.
But I love that. It's so beautiful because
want to live that way?
Right, but people would look at science sometimes and be like, it's so rigid. Yes. It's one singular belief. And yes. You're basically saying, no, it's fluid. And yes. The whole point is to keep evolving,
Correct.
Which spirituality should be the Correct. Same too. It should never be rigid. It should always be evolving with you.
Yes, but I think where I was headed, and maybe this won't be popular with
that's fine.
Your audience.
That's totally
is that
fine.
I find that the dogmatic quality with which people believe in things like whether it's GMOs, whether it's vaccinations, whether it's a specific modality of nutrition or a way of eating or a way of living, or the conflation of science with big pharma and Western medicine is fundamentally like not serving us. And I think it's incredibly specifically hypocritical of many of the parts of the spiritual or Eastern medicine community, because those are meant to be these places that are stewards or beacons of openness and open-mindedness and systems thinking and how things fit together, but they otherize science a lot. And I think that I have a lot of problems with that.
By the way, I don't think that's actually, I mean, maybe it will offend someone in our audience, but the reason I don't is the Den was created literally with that whole purpose.
Yes,
it was always, about believe what you need to believe and explore that because it might change. I mean, for everyone, things change, but learn who you are and what that works for you. So you sitting next to someone in class should not necessarily have exactly the same beliefs just because you're taking the same class.
Right.
And we support that. If anything, I'm all for that because I don't think anyone feels true happiness or feeling settled within their own body until they actually know who they are.
Right. But I think a lot of getting to decisions about, you know, like what you're going to eat, whether or not you're going to take antibiotics, whether or not you're going to get a vaccine, whether or not you're going to look further into this whole GMO thing. Maybe it could feed a lot of children in developing countries who don't have access to vitamin A, and maybe the best way to serve them is to genetically modify rice. Maybe Monsanto does some very bad things. And some things that has had long-term consequences. Maybe there are people internally at a company that are trying to do good things. I'm not advocating for any pharma or Monsanto or anything, but the intolerability binary thinking is not serving us. And I see that, and I think to go back to your original question.
Can you say that again? Because I love that quote, the intolerability. Do you even remember what you said?
I'm so present, I don't remember what I said. The intolerability and the binary qualities of the way we are currently thinking in reaction to what we believe are very binary thinkers, i.e. what's happening in politics, is just not serving us.
I totally agree.
And the same people whose entire foundations are based on openness and integrative and systems thinking and the people who are, I believe, the real people who can be stewards of healing in this world, it will come from bridge building and not from island building.
Oh my God, I mean, you guys, I got to say, I was not expecting to have this conversation, which I love because, I mean, you are in a science world right now, and this is just not what you'd normally expect. But you know what? That's what we do here, so I'm glad we're having it because I think it is such a beautiful take on science. It really is.
Yeah, and I think if you, like we always talk about, you know, what it means to live scientifically, and I'll get to why the microbiome is kind of the perfect.
And we're going to get to everything. I'm not worried.
Bridge. And it is much more a bridge than an island, which I think is a really important, and it's an invisible one that connects all of us, which we can get to. But, you know, I think that there's, you know, what happened in my life was, you know, I had my mom die. I was an athlete. So I think when you're an athlete and you're a kid, I think it puts you in your body in a way that a lot of kids, I think, come into their bodies in different ways. And I think being an athlete just happens to be one path. But you end up looking at your body very transactionally, which is it needs to perform and do X. And so in some ways, I think it's good because you're very aware. In other ways, I think you end up wiring around some things around the body that might not be serve you as you grow up.
So true for me, by the way, because I was a huge athlete too, such a tomboy.
Yeah.
And it's funny you said that because I struggle even now exercising and like working out, and people are always surprised because I'm lucky, I'm small. And I'm like, no, honestly, and I know when it stopped. Like in college, I played in college, but I stopped like halfway through. Mm-hmm. And when I stopped working out because it was transactional for me.
Yes.
It was, I work out every day. I run. I go to the gym so I can perform better on that field.
Yep.
My summers, I'd work my ass off so that when I came back for doubles, like in the fall, like I was ready to go. Mm. And finally, I just had an injury and it wasn't worth it. I was like, I'm at a Division III school. What am I doing here? Like, I've got an injury. Like, let me go enjoy some college. And it was hilarious. I tried so hard to get back in the gym, and it's still been a struggle because I developed it so transactionally. It's funny that you said that. For me, it was all about performance. It was never about like just my own.
Right.
Now in my 40s, I'm starting to get it where I'm like, I need to lube up. Like, I need to just lube the joints. I'm feeling it.
I mean, yoga became my place because I actually ended up, I went to school in Boston, and then I ended up finding, I guess at the time it was called power yoga when I was like 17 or 18. It was right after my mom died, and it was like the perfect bridge between being an athlete but also really probably needing
some spiritual,
to be in my
like,
body. And it was interesting because I started at Baron Baptiste's studio in Porter Square in Boston. It was where I really learned yoga, which is such an interesting, actually I took a class from him at Summit Series last summer, and it was like I started crying so hard.
Because it brought you back.
Oh my God. I was like, oh, I remember being in his
class. And how was it? Not to go off subject completely, but how was, I mean, so your mom passed away your senior year, I'm guessing, right? 17.
Yes.
And then you go to college where nobody knows you, nobody knows her.
Yeah.
So in some ways, like, I'm sure in some ways that was actually nice because you didn't have to talk about it or be looked at as that woman or girl. But in some ways, was it awful because you actually never, did you not process because of that?
I think...
Sorry.
I'm sure my husband
Then we'll
would
talk
say,
about the microbiome.
I think my husband would say there's a lot of things you have to love a process. I think, so I never ended up, my mom was so sick senior year that I just went to the only place that invited me to play for tennis, which was Tufts. So
I didn't get to go. We
never talked about this.
We'll do this offline because we could do this for a long time.
We're both Division III
athletes. We're going to talk about this later. You said Porter, and I was like, she either went to Harvard or she went to Tufts. We'll talk about it later.
No, and so, no, I'm not the asshole that went to Harvard and says I went to school in Boston.
They do exist.
They do. But I think what happened was I didn't get to see any schools, and so I just went to the first place that accepted me for early admission. But I actually ended up going there because my mom's two best friends from childhood, who are like my mom, my second moms, were in Boston. And so it ended up just being a really probably like the softest landing. Yeah, and actually I had a little sister. I had a little sister. She was 11 when my mom died.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was really. That was, it was hard to
But like, here's everyone like freshman year where it's like, yay, let's party. Who are you? Are you my new best friend? Are you not my new best friend? Mm-hmm. Fun. Like, where were you?
You know, the answer is I was a New York City kid that had done all of that by the age of 15 and I probably wouldn't have given a shit anyway.
Get it.
And I think that I had drank everything I needed to drink. I had tried all the drugs. Like, I had done a lot of that by the time I got to college. So I think I was and continue to be, and most people are surprised by this sometimes because I have a wide network, but I'm really a loner.
I believe that actually.
The answer was on Friday nights I would sit in the film library. I'm obsessed with film and I spent most of my 20s making films and always wanted to be a filmmaker and made a number of films and kind of knew that's what I always wanted to do was be a storyteller, probably where I funneled some of this. Feeling and I the answer is on Friday night after I sold weed to a bunch of frat kids I would mostly spend my time in the film library by myself, and I spent a lot of time by myself. I spent a lot of time with my professors too, that I was like drawn to, and I spent a lot of time in Boston at my godmother's homes or whatever, but I mostly knew I don't think I wanted to be at school.
I get that.
I think I knew I already wanted to work. I'd already had internship. I always, and so every chance I had, whether it was like interimships, I guess they call it, like Christmas break and then summers, I was working in film companies and I was already going and working on movies. And I just kind of knew I've always had a foot out off campus. I don't feel like
you,
I really
yeah, you
engaged,
weren't the like going for the typical
no,
college
but I did,
experience.
And I did have some good friends. I had friends and I would go out, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say I had the typical college experience.
Were you, scientifically minded always, or did the death of your mom actually bring that out in you?
I think I've always been really, science and technology have always been incredibly interesting to me, particularly the intersection of design and storytelling and art and science and technology. When I was, in college, I taught myself HTML very early on and was coding
I still don't
my
know
uncle's
the fuck
like
how to
insurance
do that.
Company website, and I those were things. I think I was always had a proclivity towards tech and science. I think came through my, I've always been really curious about how things work. So I've always kind of over-indexed and going deep on something and understanding it. And I think health just happened to be more the thing that came from dissatisfaction, which was I'm a big skeptic. And I think I've always loved understanding how I don't take something someone just tells me or sells me at face value. And so I think one of the things that I found both as an athlete, but then coming into, I think one of the things that people don't talk a lot about for women's health is how, biology is agency. You can advocate. I think about feminism and this kind of new feminist movement. But I mean, you can be a such better advocate for your body and for your health and for policy if you understand how your body works.
And most of us don't.
And most of us don't. Yeah. I mean, I always tell people most people, particularly I guess in LA, can talk to you for an hour about what they're eating and what diet they're on and why they're not on seven other diets.
But don't understand
literally
why.
Ask them how digestion works. not one person can tell you past your mouth, maybe your esophagus, maybe your stomach, small intestine. Like most people have fundamentally no understanding of like what happens. And if they did, they'd never try and alkalize their body.
This is why I love what you do, because the company, you guys should check out their website, C.com, because it is very informative, mm-hmm. and you are all about teaching. And so how did you then make the switch from everything you were doing to all of a sudden this? Like, you did leave a job pretty abruptly, which I think is amazing, yes. too.
Worse than that, I left a company I co-founded in tech, where, like, there aren't that many female co-founders. So I spent a long time making films and storytelling, and then really wanted to move into like the startup world. And I built a couple tech companies, one in kind of like internet, web, and e-commerce, the second in mobile. But I think when I was commuting from LA to New York right? My body thought, ugh, because I had a miscarriage. And I think it was just like my miscarriage was kind of my, just a perfect moment for like my body to kind of just remind me that probably the life I was living wasn't viable. That life inside me wasn't viable, not right time, whatever biologically was kind of going on. And it was really just the moment where I was like, this is just not the life I want to be living. I shouldn't be like, Virgin American stewardesses shouldn't know my name. It's not a healthy thing. And I think that moment, that night of my DNC, I wrote a resignation letter to my partners. And I just, you know, it's not them, it's me. And there's a million reasons and data points that went into that moment. But I think it was a very, very conscious, like, this is just not the life I want to be living. And if I'm going to be working this hard, it better be for something where I can make a tremendous impact in the world.
But it's interesting because once again, indirectly, like science and spirituality were connected. It's like the 100%. Science of yes. your body totally made you make a whole different yes. decision yes. that you didn't even question.
Yes.
That if someone asked you to make that decision mm-hmm. 2 weeks prior, you probably wouldn't have made.
Yes, correct. Absolutely. And I think that like our bodies are incredible. They're everyone's obsessed with personalization and biohacking and quantified self and using apps and all these things, but I actually think there's many biomarkers that we don't pay attention to.
Like what?
Like your poop.
Well, let's talk about it. I love shit. Like, I can talk about shit all the time, but like, what are certain,
I mean,
like,
we talk about poop all the time.
But what are like the most obvious things about your poop that people.
I mean, everything from, you know, regular.
Like, what is regular? Okay, regular, I know this sounds ridiculous, but like, what is regular?
I mean, the truth is it does depend, but, you know, 1 to 2 bowel movements a day is regular. There's biomarkers like regularity, hydration of your stool, consistency, color, ease of expulsion.
Shouldn't be doing that.
It should flow.
Should be easy. Well, can we talk about this for a second? Sidebar, and then we're gonna get to the microbiome because we're both married.
Yes.
So speaking of ease of flow,
yes.
If according to this, all men basically have irregular poops because they're all in the bathroom for like 45 minutes.
Yep.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah, that I think that
the conversation I always have with my husband, cultural. I'm like, I know, I'm always like,
well, my husband takes seed, so it's pretty fast.
Oh, but I'm always like, you're either ready or you're not. Like, I don't understand what to tell you. If it's ready, it tells you it's ready, and you go, and it comes out. Like, I don't understand what the 45 minute wait is.
I mean, I think you can probably thank the iPhone for that.
Oh, I know, but it's even pre. It's like
pre that,
and it is cultural.
Pre that, it was just newspapers, and
I was like, if you were the only one in the house taking care of everything, those poops would come out a lot faster.
100%. Although I have found myself. In the moments where I feel like everything is kind of crazy, I will like just go to the bathroom.
Oh, I
to
do.
Just like.
By the way, I get it. I
like,
do too.
I think I could use this 2 minutes.
I mean, speaking of Tufts, like I've studied for finals on the toilet.
Yes. So oh, yeah.
Like, and my husband came in the other day. He goes, "Are you peeing cross-legged?" I'm like, "I'm reading." I finished peeing. Now I'm reading. So I get it. I'm all for the library of it all. Mm-hmm. But like, you know.
No, but truthfully, I mean, I mean, TMI. I mean. With a potty squatty or probably with the correct posture, theoretically it shouldn't, but you know, you can thank Victorian era plumbing for the fact that, you know, royalty didn't want to sit near the ground with the lay with all the lay people. And so we ended up with a mechanism by which we go to the bathroom that is, we should just be squatting because if you squat, it just comes right out and there's really very, very little difficulties. We've caught, I mean, the way
basically rich people caused a lot of problems.
Like what else? And then I want to go to back to other biomarkers.
Just, I mean, really just the architecture of the experience of going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Put our bodies in a shape that is not, you know, it's not natural.
Conducive.
So I mean, many other cultures just squat and they have zero GI issues.
Which is fascinating because we have so many resources to never have like any issues.
68 million Americans are constipated, have experienced chronic constipation.
And so how much, and I do want to go to biomarkers, how much do you think that is connected to nutrition, biome, gut health, all of that, and how much of it is stress? Or is it all like
they're all connected?
They're all connected.
They're all connected. But I would say, I mean, the American Western diet is, I mean, I would say the fundamental thing that's missing from it is fiber. And that obviously is incredibly impactful around the biomarkers we were talking about and around GI health.
So what are other biomarkers that are obvious that we all have every day and we're just not paying attention to?
I mean, I think there's a study came out last year. This is not scientific, meaning there was a scientific study, but jury is out how conclusive it is. Actually, there's some really interesting studies around like the sallowness of someone's face and the clarity of eyes, which I thought was really interesting. Which a lot of Chinese, you know, a lot of Eastern modalities,
yeah, because they're like stick out your tongue,
but they're starting to kind of put some data around that. I think your skin is a really interesting biomarker, like the hydration, the whether or not you have any kind of like from an inflammatory response perspective. I mean, psoriasis and eczema and atopic dermatitis. I mean, these are all things that, you know, you can kind of understand, like, because we now are starting to understand the mechanisms that are happening internally that trigger a lot of those kind of superficial inflammatory responses.
So let's talk about the microbiome. Mm-hmm. Explain what it is, because the question I just wanted to ask you, and I feel like would be how much of is the gut connected to autoimmune? But I feel like we should start then talking about what the gut is and autoimmune and what the microbiome. I feel like we should do that.
Yes.
I promise you guys microbiome. We're going to do it.
The microbiome is the collection. The technical definition is that it's the collection of genes that are expressed by, but the easiest way to understand it is that it's the collection of bacterium, the microorganisms, 38 trillion of them, that live in and on your body. Actually, we now know there's also something called an exosome, that you have a bacterial cloud that actually surrounds you. So
it's like a bacterial aura.
Yes, in the spiritual world, they call it an aura. But actually, there's microbes that kind of like... Yeah.
Are they different colors? Cloud. Purple, green? I'm just kidding.
Yes.
have we just solved
every
everything?
Every microbe correlates with your
chakra.
With a chakra and also astrologically.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I'm just kidding.
I know everyone's writing it down. What's...
Yeah, exactly. The red microbes. And so that the microbiome is the collection of bacteria. Again, 38 trillion microorganisms, about 3 to 5 pounds of your body.
That's that crazy. And unfortunately, you guys, you need it. So you can't get rid of that to get skinnier.
No, but microbes and metabolism definitely are, you know, your metabolic health and weight loss will be increasingly meaningful, and that bridge will be incredibly clear in the coming years. And from a research perspective,
interesting. So healthy bacteria you also call it an ecosystem a lot.
Yes. Well, I mean, we are an ecosystem. I mean, if you think of yourself, you're a coral reef. I mean, you're not human. In the sense that you have you're about 50-50 in terms of human cells and microorganisms in your body.
So crazy.
50% human cells.
None of us think about the microorganisms. So that's such an amazing way of thinking about it.
It's very topical here, especially there's a number of people over the journey of building Seed that I've talked a lot to who come from the meditation world that tell me that now after kind of talking with me or reading some of our material, when they meditate, they now think about their microbes, which I think is such an interesting way of thinking about it. And there's a lot of writing too about how the microbiome is redefining our sense of self. Because if you no longer orient yourself as a human, and you think about yourself as this kind of ecosystem and this system of checks and balances that wants to be in stasis, that wants to be in balance, which is how any ecosystem kind of survives and persists, it's a really beautiful idea of like, well, then what could you be doing and what are the choices you could be making that serve this ecosystem? So and it's an interesting way
to think about. I have two questions on that, and then I want to talk about the things we can do to serve it. Yeah. What is is it one larger ecosystem with many mini ecosystems, or is it just yes. mini one?
Like, it's an amazing question. So the majority of microbes are in your gut, which partially why like the gut has been like euphemistically kind of conflated with microbiome, but like actually there's a microbiome. Really, any surface of your body that touches that's external to the world has an ecosystem. Just last week at a neuroscience conference, they're starting to understand that actually even the brain may have its own microbiome, wow. Which they thought the brain was sterile. Prior to that.
Wow.
Earlier, last couple of years, one of the things that's been really dispelled is this notion that a baby, an infant embryo is sterile, placenta is sterile, and that the first microbial exposure is in the vaginal canal. But now we're starting to understand that there are microbes present in the placenta and the embryo. There are microbes that migrate from the oral microbiome of a mother down prior to birth, whereas before we thought that the seeding process, the reason we're called seed is because an infant's first exposure to microbes is called the process of seeding.
Oh, wow.
Because it's what seeds your microbiome. It's a biological term, and it's the process that forms, you know, your infant's immune system, GI system.
Now, so everyone has their own microbiome.
Yes, it does.
It's like a snowflake.
It's as unique. It weighs more. It's as unique as your thumbprint, you know, your fingerprint.
But there is something genetic in it, is what you're saying. It does come from...
So microbes express genes. So I was just giving you more of the biological definition.
I'm fascinated.
Which is really the true, true biological definition is it's the collection of genes that are expressed by the microbes that are in and on you. But the easiest way to think about the microbiome and to understand it is to just think of it. It's the collection of microbes, the 38 trillion that live in and on your body. To your question about are there different ecosystems, so the microbiome is the collection of all of those, but you can also talk about your skin microbiome, which if you think one really cool way to understand it is that my skin microbiome on my forearm is more similar to your microbiome on your forearm than your forearm is to your mouth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's how different it's like. If you think like your mouth is a tundra, my forearm is the desert. You know, my gut is the rainforest.
Like right. So these two deserts are going to be more alike, even though they're still their own desert.
Yes. Correct.
So,
which is a beautiful idea for society.
It really is, though. So, is there a way though that like you could take a test and figure out exactly what your microbiome for any area is made of?
There are different. The answer is. There are this more sophisticated ways of doing that, which probably are not really like the home diagnostic kits. But the answer is yes, you can.
And you're on your way probably getting there in science.
No, there are places like for example, one of our partners is Baylor College of Medicine in Texas, where we can do full metagenomic sequencing on bacteria that's present, you know, anywhere. But what I just mean is that the kits or the things you can kind of buy online are often not
great.
Capturing the full microbiota.
So what happens when, first of all, how often, like when you're born, are you in balance at that moment?
No, and actually it's a beautiful question. So no, you're really, so a third of the carbohydrates in breast milk are not digestible by the infant's human body. They're only food, they're only fertilizer for microbes. So really for the first 2.5-3 years of life, you're growing into, you're kind of growing your garden. Or an infant's garden into what is ultimately referred to as a steady state microbiome, and that stabilizes somewhere between, you know, 18 to 36 months, or kind of there isn't yet a kind of conclusion on exactly when.
And what things, like, so for instance, like I couldn't breastfeed my daughter, never got breast milk because she was adopted. Mm-hmm. So does that mean she's a definite, like she's deficient in that way and totally out of balance?
It's a really great question, because I think one of the things that gets really also shamed is C-section versus vaginal, and this idea that you like screwed your child if you end up with a C-section, but actually, which is really sad that we do that to women. But
the same way about breastfeeding a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure. And look, my journey with seed started because I couldn't supply all of my son's breast milk after 4 months. And if you're someone who lives in this world the way that I do, it's like, it's almost where like I wish I didn't know so much,
right?
Because it was a really hard experience. But it was really my entrepreneurial like aha moment of, well, I'm going to go reinvent infant formula, because the options that are available to me, including the kind of like 1%, go buy the expensive stuff from like Europe,
Germany, like Camel
was not
whatever.
An answer that was sufficient to me. And specifically because of what we are knowing and continue to know about an infant's developing microbiome and things that we could do today. But that research is really expanding very, very quickly. And there's kind of a global race between a lot of the big CPG companies and number of labs around the world to like really understand that that critical window when that steady state microbiome is kind of being is developing in the absence of things like breast milk. So to answer your question about your daughter and also to talk about C-section versus vaginal health, it's like one of the things that people say is that, you know, oh, if a child doesn't come through the birth canal, it's not going to get the microbes from the fecal matter and from the vaginal biome that kind of serve to start that seeding process. But what they have found is that if a child is breastfed for at least six months to a year, at around 6 months, the microbiome of a breastfed child versus a C-section child start to look alike, and that it's not as fatalistic as I think some people, or at least some media interpretations of the science kind of have tried to make it out to. In terms of your daughter, a lot of other things can make an impact. Environment, exposure to an animal.
Oh, we have a lot of those.
Being in nature, diet, stress, home cleaning products. There's a really interesting infant study that just came out around infant obesity and like cleaning products, which
interesting.
Interesting. So really, you know, I think there are many, and obviously there's ways of testing it, but breast milk really is probably like one of the most critical. I mean, it, from an evolutionary perspective, there's many reasons why it evolved and it is incredibly, incredibly important. But I wouldn't say like in the absence of it, like you're just screwed for life.
Right.
I think there are other things, and probably I would say actually what I should have mentioned is most notably whether or not an infant or a child has antibiotics in the first 2 years of life.
We made it till three.
Yeah.
So talk to me about.
No, but it's a good marker. Two to three is a different. There's a difference.
Talk to me about what a healthy microbiome signifies. Mm-hmm. Like with these bridges you're talking about. Like sure. What are these invisible bridges? Mm-hmm. So like, what does it mean?
Oh, when I was saying bridges, I was just saying, you know, microbes are everywhere. So they're on plants, they're on animals, they're on surfaces, they're in us, they're on us, they're around us, they surround us. I was saying that we just like to say it, seed like. Bacteria is the invisible internet of everything. And so it was more just a statement of like...
Do they communicate with each other?
Yes.
Like are mine communicating with yours right now?
Oh, yeah, of course. They're having a much better podcast.
But like what? Like what do they communicate?
They
like,
signal. They signal to each other.
I'm totally blanking on the name. The pheromones ESP. Like and stuff like that. Does that have anything to do with it?
Different microbes communicate in different ways. They signal to each other. Even a dead microbe can signal to a microbe, which is really interesting. Kind of like
it's fascinating. What are they?
I say that in a meditation place, it kind of takes on a different meaning.
But what are they signaling? Like
depends whether or not to express a specific gene, whether or not to switch something on. You know, certain specific genetic switches. They signal to other cells.
I feel like we need to start respecting them a little bit more.
Oh, I mean,
it feels like there's a lot of power that we haven't been like.
I mean, I think I think what I would say is that we haven't empowered them.
That's interesting.
Really interesting way
so
to
talk
think
to me
it.
About that. So by empowering them, what effects does that have on us as just our one ecosystem and then us as a whole?
Well, I would say the first thing is that for anybody who has this notion that like most bacteria is bad or pathogenic, needs to change that. And actually like less than 1% of bacterium that we have identified.
So basically, even with kids, I was very big on like, get dirty, it's fine, I don't care.
Yes.
Like, really, I never had Purell, mm-hmm. I never had any of it. Yeah. I was like, really.
Yeah, and I think, and look,
I got made fun of a lot for it, but.
Totally. And look, there's a happy medium when surgeons started washing their hands, more people survived, right? So
right, because like you're not an open body. Right?
Yeah, you know, so there are people who take all of these things to an extreme, which I don't think is. Kind of what I was saying earlier, like not scientific and therefore not serving. But when you think about how many, every day we understand more and more about what these invisible organisms do in our bodies. We couldn't digest food without them. They're incredibly impactful and starting to understand even more and more around the gut-brain axis. They impact cholesterol. They impact metabolic health, cellular health, how you respond to stress, how your body, the health of your immune system, how you respond to literally any, you know, food is information. Some people forget that. Like anything that comes in from the external world is information and needs to be processed by your body. And so when you think about that, it's like they're like your IT department.
Oh my God, I could finally afford one. Yeah, they come for free.
They come for free. They actually know which cable you need for which thing.
They come for free and they don't fuck up all the time.
No, it's amazing. And they really don't charge you, actually, which is incredible unless you don't respect them, as you were saying. But I think we forget that, you know, they produce incredibly, and I mean, look, you couldn't synthesize vitamin K in your body without a microbe. You know, microbes can synthesize folate in your body. They can, they're responsible for the integrity of, you know, your gut or your digestive tract is,
Like your intelligence.
TBD.
What about depression?
They certainly play a major role in your appetite and what you crave.
Interesting.
And so, you know, they play a role in your mouth. Obviously, the only reason cavities come from biofilms that bacteria create on the surface of your teeth. So, you know, I mean, really, if you think about, you have this like defense system that you can't see that decides what comes in, what goes out, feeding your front lines
in a war zone.
Right, exactly, which is like probably the last people you'd want to not have a power bar.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you think about the fact that you have this, we're two-holed organism. So we have a mouth and an anus, and we have one external surface that lives inside our body. So we're donuts. If you think about a human, we're a donut.
Delicious.
So there's no hole, so it goes from here to here. And that's it. So your entire gut, your digestive system is technically an external surface to the world.
Wow.
So when you start to think that way, it's if you lay it all out, it would be about the surface area of two tennis courts.
Oh my God. In each of us.
In each of us. Not an infant.
but you know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
And
you're like one tennis court.
But it's
for an
only separated from our bodies from a cell wall that's one cell thick, which if you think about it, is like half a human hair.
Wow.
And the integrity of that wall, you know, unlike one that we might build a certain part of our country, is really important. And microbes are a big part of making sure that wall, that epithelial layer, that what are called tight junctions, are really integrous and strong. And that's what makes sure, like, you've probably heard of leaky gut or gut permeability. It's really a big, important part of, and actually that's one of the big things that probiotics can do when you administer beneficial bacteria. They can ensure that that junctions, those tight junction cells stay really tight so that nothing's going through your bloodstream and therefore triggering your body to think there's an invader and triggering an immune response, which is what autoimmune condition.
Hey, I want to tell you about our next Dentalk Live. These events have been so much fun, and this one is going to be a blast. We have the That's So Retrograde Girls coming back in for an ultimate girls' night in. It's going to be 7:30 p.m. Friday, May 17th at La Brea. There'll be CBD cocktails, mocktails. My intent's going to be there making bracelets. We'll have some tarot card reading happening, some rosé, light bites, and of course, tons of laughs. Ooh, and we're going to do a mini craft night with the ladies, which they are known for. And yes, I promise there'll still be an interview. So go to dentalkspodcast.com, reserve your space. This one is going to fill up, and I promise it's going to be a great night. Can't wait to see you there. Hey guys, so here is the discount code, all the info you've been waiting for. I know you're going to want to get your hands on some of this product, so we're going to make it easier for you. Go to C.com, use code DEN20, that's DEN20, at C.com for 20% off of your first month of the daily symbiotic. So there you go, you're getting 20% off. Go to C.com, DEN20. So what are like and it sounds like probiotics are one of them, which I want to get to because that's more new in the grand scheme of like things people are talking about. What are easy takeaways of things people can do?
Eat fiber.
To balance plants.
There was a recent, so the American Gut Project, which is probably one of the largest citizen science like projects, recently published that, you know, and I'm sure a lot of your audience is probably many either already eats a lot of plants or is vegan or, you know, so this is probably not new.
One of the things that is new
is this notion that actually it's about the diversity and the abundance of. So if you can eat up to like 40 types of plants a week, they found a correlation with a more diverse microbiome, which, you know, after $150 million spent under the Obama administration on the NIH's Human Microbiome Project, the conclusion was, A, there is no one healthy microbiome, but B, another kind of beautiful parallel with society, the only markers of health that scientists kind of agree on for microbiome or around diversity.
Which is really beautiful. So the more diverse you are with what you put into your mouth and then therefore gut.
Yeah. So
by diverse, healthy.
Yeah. So just diverse. So I think what happens in a lot of like wellnessy like communities or like in people who like over index and interest in diet is like you find this thing that you love to eat and like you basically like eat the same thing every day.
Right.
And I think what came out of that, and by the way, that's not, I mean, obviously that versus a Big Mac, of course, that's going to be more healthy, but
of course,
you know, one of the things that they found was that it was the diversity of plants that made a really big impact too.
But it's interesting. It's like working out. It's like working out too. If you always do the same exercises, you end up not having the same results and you have to like switch it up.
Yeah, I think
kind of.
Well, I think that's the people's experience of it. I don't know, but I absolutely just even behaviorally, like I think that's how people process things.
And what are things that we do that hurt our microbiome that like are easy things we can tell people? Just watch alcohol. This. Pay attention. Okay, alcohol.
Alcohol is a major perturbator. Like alcohol causes gut permeability, and so that's definitely a big one. Sugar. Is a really big one.
And that's all kinds of sugar, like even in fruit?
The answer is processed. I mean, added sugar. So sugar that's not naturally occurring. Stress is not good for your microbiome. Actually, even stress from crowded spaces, which is really interesting.
I love that specificity.
There's an interesting study about crowded spaces in the microbiome. Even living in what's called the built environment, which is in city life, has an impact on your microbiome, which is really interesting. They see lower diversity in like urban dwellers. A good thing is having a pet, as I mentioned earlier, which can be really meaningful. And then like sweeteners. So I was talking about sugar, but even they found like perturbations in the microbiome from sweeteners like aspartame and other kind of sugar replacements, antibiotics, like so overusing. So I'm not to be sensationalistic about not using them because antibiotics can be life-saving at the right moment, but not taking them prophylactically or when you don't
need
them.
That drives me crazy. When people are like, oh, I have a cold, I called my doctor and they prescribe. I'm like, you didn't even go, like.
I know.
Chances are you probably would have waited out for 10 days.
I know. We're the Z-Pak generation.
Oh, so. I'm so anti-Z-Pak. It's like, I mean, I gave my daughter an antibiotic last week. She had a UTI. I'm not, my parents are doctors. I'm not anti-antibiotic at all. Mm-hmm. But it makes me sad. These doctors will just prescribe it to get people off their back.
Yes. Well, I think it's a liability thing too.
Makes me sad.
And then NSAIDs, like a lot of people don't think about that, taking like ibuprofen and Advil and a lot of those over the counter medications. I think they don't, sometimes we now know that NSAIDs have an impact on the microbiome also.
Now, when we say impact, is it like, okay, I drank a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. So my balance is off. But, you know, if I start paying attention and I'm eating my 38, like diverse plants and I'm doing, does it all go back to balance?
As somebody who has to talk about this from a marketing perspective all the time, there is like kind of nothing that I wished more than like the microbiome was about like you're out of balance, you go back to balance.
Right, because you're selling products. You're
replenished,
like, take this.
You're restored. And I wish that there was a way, what we're always trying to look for is like ways that we can be translators integrously with like where the science is today. And what's really interesting, out of balance in microbiome science is called dysbiosis. And what we don't, and there are, by the way, even scientific journals use some of these this language, like restore, replenish. We're always trying to figure out what is the language that we could use where a scientist wouldn't cringe, but where somebody could understand it. And so,
that's where you guys are amazing, because you are bridging the gap.
Yeah, except that, except it takes that extra second or moments to really think about how you say something. I'd love to say restore, but restore implies that you're going back to where something was. And what we know is that you can never return someone to exactly where they were when they were 3 years old, where they were. There will be things in the future. What are called like autologous FMTs, where we'll probably like freeze our stool and then reintroduce it at moments where kind of the way like we do cord blood.
That's amazing.
Other things that kind of are, yeah. So I think there'll be things, I mean, FMTs happen, fecal transplants happen now, not actually even from your own, but from other healthy individuals. So there'll be a whole other set of probiotics, introduction of microbes that could be really beneficial. But it's a hard language to define. I wish for your audience, I could just say, yeah, you just, when you start eating more plant, you just go back and then it replenishes.
But you don't go back.
I love to say that. I would say that, to be determined in science in the future.
Fair enough.
But that there are absolutely things that we know post antibiotics, for example,
probiotics,
plus other factors like lifestyle, diet, sleep, enough sleep is really important for your microbiome. Yeah.
You and I agree with that.
Yeah. I really now the more you study, the more you're just like, I'm just going to sleep tonight for science.
I'm going to do it for science. Yeah. But let's talk about probiotics. Cause I mean, that is the product you guys have out now. You call it a symbiotic, which I love.
That's because it's a probiotic and a prebiotic. Yes.
What is the difference?
So the best way to think about it is that the most reductive way to say it.
Be as reductive as possible.
Probiotics, good bacteria. Prebiotic, food for good bacteria.
Okay. And why do people take it separately?
You mean in general, like in the market now today? I mean, most people, well, a number of reasons. There are kind of two very distinct classes of prebiotics. Most things that are on the market today are really food for the microbes, for bacteria. Many of them, you don't know whether they're equal opportunity feeders, so you don't know that they're just going to feed the good stuff. The ones that we use are actually a little bit more complex, which is that they're large molecules that bacteria break down to create metabolites and other things that are beneficial for your health. So they're not like a substrate that they grow off of, but they're compounds that they break down. Sorry, they're large molecules. They break down into compounds and create these metabolites that, you know, different metabolites that are good for your health. So ours come from. They're also called non-fermenting prebiotics, whereas most in the market, probably a lot of your audience has something that's like called inulin or GOS or FOS. These are like long chain, like galacto oligosaccharides, fructose. These are the things that are on the back of the
and
that most people like don't, you know, are like, well, I don't know what that is.
That's what I'm saying. It's really confusing because you're always like, there's a million probiotics. Some have to be in the refrigerator, some don't. So I'm like, wait, how does this one have to be? This one doesn't. What does it mean? Is one better than the other?
The answer is no one publishes their data. Most people aren't transparent about what's in it. Most people don't even say which strain. They just say the species. So it's like selling you a book with a title with nothing on the pages. So it's very hard, really hard to know or talk about other companies because most don't have this information readily available. I think what ours, for example, do not require refrigeration. They're shelf stable. I think we think that there's some aspects of refrigeration in terms of condensation that, you know, microbes are very sensitive to light, heat, and temperature, light, heat, and moisture. And so things where there's going to be condensation, I think we sometimes think or could be even less, you know, more impactful than not being refrigerated. But again, incredibly hard to know because there's very little regulatory needed to have a probiotic on the market.
Okay, I want to ask a weird question because you mentioned like when they're dead, they can still communicate. So like, what happens to your microbiome when you pass away? Like, does it still exist? Does it move somewhere else? Does it disappear with you?
It feels like
if it's an ecosystem within itself.
Yes, it's a really, really good question. I mean, obviously, we bury people a little differently now than probably when we were evolving. And I mean, one of the most beautiful things to understand about the microbiome is that it has a maternal lineage, which means that it's been passed from mother to child. And that's that the first microbial exposure is from the mother, which means that microbes travel from on the maternal side, right? Which is really interesting just to think about, which I think is really beautiful. As I think one of our emails says, we are responsible for stewarding the entire evolution of microbes from from mother to child, but still only get paid 80 cents on the dollar.
That's true. So true.
The answer I have to do a little bit more research for you. I need to think about
that. I'm so curious because by the way, the more you talk about this, the more I do feel like it's also spiritual. Like I also picture when they're in balance, it's like vibrating, which I feel like for some reason that's where I went. I'm like, oh, they're vibrating, which to me is kind of exactly what through meditation, all these things, we try and get to this like place of just being where you actually do feel all your energy. I don't know. It all feels so connected.
Yeah. I mean, I think probiotics and like are the fastest growing consumer health category in the world. And I think one of the things, and that's a reflection of our obsession with like gut mania, and gut health. And my thesis for this has been not just because the yogurt industry spent billions of dollars telling everybody with Jamie Lee Curtis what probiotics are, but because there's this centuries, if not long more, of like an understanding from Eastern philosophies that there was kind of something really important in there. And then you had all of a sudden, after the Human Genome Project, we had the technology to actually start to understand what these microbes were. And then that has obviously put microbiome science on this crazy trajectory. But what has happened is you have, you know, the microbiome is like this very, very rare area of science where like East and West kind of meet.
It's really cool.
East says to West, oh, really? Like, obviously, we've known forever, like, it's, oh, really? You think it's important now? We've been telling you that for, like, centuries. And then West is kind of like, yeah, but you had no idea what was in it, and you certainly didn't know there was, like, a brain microbiome, and you certainly didn't know that it could do all these things, and also that, you know, tumors will metabolize chemotherapy differently because of the microbiome of a tumor. So, like, and then Eastern people are like, oh, yeah, you're right. So now it's like, but it is this, it's very strange. Like, if you think about, we sequence the human genome, you don't walk into Whole Foods and see anything on the, that didn't impact anything on the shelf in Whole Foods. But what we're seeing is that the science is really coming online at a time where you've had this incredible move to alternative and preventive care. And so they just kind of, I think, in the Venn diagram is moving much closer to a circle. And I think the microbiome is that really beautiful bridge where they actually can both kind of talk to one another. And I think, you know, of course, nutrition ends up being an also really important part of that, which has been very left out of Western medicine and is not taught in medical school in the ways that it really should be. And so I think now that the starting to understand the inputs and the outputs and how much like this 3 to 5 pounds in our body is actually incredibly impactful for so many things.
So one last question before we do your four U's. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest, like if you had a myth bust, like right now, what's one of the biggest fallacies out there, whether it be a food, like is it yogurt, whether it be something about, like what is the one thing you could tell people right now, like you all believe this, stop doing it. And I know you don't like to say it in such harsh words.
When you started off saying like fallacies, I was like, oh, climate change, real. Read the UN report.
I'll bring you back for that one.
Well, it's all connected. I mean, it's all connected. I would say one of the biggest fallacies, and by fallacy, I certainly there's probably no malintention in it, is just this notion that, you know, fermented foods and kombucha are probiotics. And that yogurt is a probiotic.
Oh, thank God, because I don't like any of those things. That makes me feel better. I've always felt so guilty not liking it.
Yeah, well, I think...
They're still good for you, though, right?
I think wellness is like the new Photoshop. You know, I think it's just a whole new realm of being able to shame ourselves with.
Yeah.
It's like a whole new language. It's like, oh, I don't look like this. Oh, that sucks. Oh, also, I'm not eating this perfect thing. I also suck.
I'm just a horrible human.
Yeah, I'm a horrible human.
I don't actually want to move off because that is interesting when you brought up climate change. You joke, you're like, they're all connected.
Yes.
So I do love that. Again, that goes to the bigger ecosystem of it all.
Yep.
So it is...
I mean, we're so narcissistic. I mean, we always are like, well, we have to save the planet. Or we think of our health as somehow disconnected from the planet, right? Of that like somehow our health and what's happening to our bodies is not at all reflective of, or, and I don't mean just because like the air is bad, but like, you know, the decreasing of diversity of our microbiome internally is mirrored in the decreasing in diversity of the ecosystem of our planet. I mean, 2 weeks ago, the official report came out that we've depleted 70% of the wildlife in this planet since 1979.
Oh my God.
70% we've lost. They're all species. It's the same thing.
And so, and you're saying there's always a link when if you actually pay, if they
could. I mean, all of these things, and that's before you start going into just like the things we do as humans to interrupt the environment. But it just in terms of, I mean, there's so many parallels in terms of things we're experiencing, you know, in human health. I mean, we've never died of non-communicable diseases at the rate we are now any other time in history ever. I mean, like you didn't die of cardiovascular disease like 200 years ago. You died of influenza.
Right.
You died of a plague. You died of communicable diseases because you didn't have sewage. Sewage systems. We're doing this to ourselves. And that's actually probably what's kind of most terrifying.
And what you guys do, which I love, is you're empowering people to to take the power into their own hands to know how to actually treat their bodies with respect and know, yeah, and know it for themselves, not just mm-hmm. listen. You're not just saying, hey, use my product. You're saying,
no, in fact, I'm very much the, I mean, actually, I hope none of our investors are listening. Very much the opposite. In that, actually, one of the things we say all the time as a brand is that health doesn't come in a bottle, not even ours. And it's like, you know, if you're not making the right choices every day,
this isn't the magic bullet.
There are no there right. isn't, and there are none.
But I love that you guys don't pretend to be, because that is no. marketing 101.
No, and yes, and I think unfortunately, like, the fear-based place from which most of these brands and people who sell you things for your body create community. Like, if you start, I mean, I think that's what's happening in politics today, right? It's that's where you get a lack of openness. That's where you don't ultimately end up trusting, but you end up trusting in fear. So, because you're too scared of the unknown.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the definition of trust. I think Esther Perel quoted somebody else recently telling me the definition of trust. And it was like this beautiful way of saying, like, it is ultimately being okay and surrendering to a certain aspect of what's unknown. And I think that all these brands and these companies, if they just, you know, these promises are terrifying.
Right.
Terrifying. But mostly because they really don't encourage you to live scientifically. And that just goes back to the beginning of what you're saying, which is, what would happen if you just weren't, if you just said, I'm going to try this ketogenic diet. I'm going to try this for 2 weeks. I'm going to see, does this serve me? How do I feel? I'm going to document it. I'm going to see what this feels like. I might have to iterate a little. I might have to. But what if it was, I don't need to start a Instagram handle called Keto Girl 567. I don't need to dedicate my entire life to believing that ketogenic diet is the only possible way, because that's not how science works. Science evolves and iterates.
Because your microbiome changes, I'm assuming.
Sure, your microbiome changes. Many other things parts of your body change. Science evolves. And so, like, what would it mean if you just could ask questions and live in a place of kind of practice and experimentation? And actually, how much better would be off as a society? But it's a beautiful kind of methodology. And so I think in some ways that's probably what we try and instill more than anything.
I love
which
that.
Is, here's where the science is today. Here's maybe how we would approach it. We had an incredible experience last Friday around the flu shot, and we seemed to have pissed off a number of people who I would probably self-identify as, like, an anti-vaxxer. And it was our first moment of, like, well, the honeymoon's over. And it was an incredible moment where, as a brand, you have to say, like, you know, the people who've believed us up until now love our spiritual language and the way we've made science accessible. But the minute you surface something that all of a sudden...
their deep belief...
is a belief that is at their core what they must hold on to. Unfollow, buy, fuck you guys. You thought I had a customer. Now I know your core audience. You're backed by CDC. You're funded by Big Pharma. And I'm like, these are human beings that are, like, fundamentally just don't actually want to let any information in. Not because we're right. Not because we're right.
They don't want to hear it.
But just to even engage in the conversation, to even ask a question.
I think you're right. That is so what's going on in society. That's right. No one will engage in any conversation.
Except that the same people who are often on the farther side are the ones who are often living in the space of saying, we need to be open-minded. We need to be healing. These are the people who have this, a lot of the spiritual, you know, like, a lot of the people who are commenting about this stuff had soul vibe healer, organic girl, blah, blah, blah. Like, these are the people that should be stewarding the openness, right?
But they were very angry.
But they get immediately so angry. And it was our
but
first moment.
Not, but like they're not living their practice, which is what we always say all the time. It's mm-hmm. not always comfortable, but yes. You have to live it.
Yeah. And so I think we just say, like, a healthy debate is healthy for a reason.
For everyone. Yeah. I could not, I preach it all the time on here. It's like, ooh, it drives me crazy what's happening in society. Let's do your four yous really quickly.
Yeah.
Favorite book.
The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn.
That's a great book.
I made that documentary.
You did?
Did you ever see it?
Yes, that's amazing. Oh my God, I'm going to rewatch it, by the way. Type of meditation you rely on the most?
Anything guided.
Fair enough. I love that answer, actually. That's the most honest answer we've had on here. Do you journal or have any other daily practice?
I walk.
Everywhere? I know. You know, the first time I met you, you and I went for a walk. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I like to walk and... talk, think, get a tea, change my orientation.
Favorite self-care hack?
Is this the same as personal practice?
No, like what's just something you do? Mm. Like for you, it could be taking probiotics or mm-hmm. it could be something you take a bubble bath. Like what's your self-care hack? I mean, it can be anything. It could be something weird.
I think baths are good for your vagina.
Okay, well, see, I love this. I love that we're ending on this. Someone who else
I just had to say vagina once.
You know what's funny?
Because that was our whole thing.
Oh my God, you guys, we were on a panel together. And I mean, I'll just say it. I actually wanted to ask you and I got late, but it's hard. We both have businesses. We both have a three-year-old. We both have mm-hmm. significant others. And we were just talking about how exhausting it is. And sometimes as much as you want to have sex, you're just tired. So we kept calling. We're like, our vaginas are just so tired.
So tired.
And somehow that came out on the panel. And That's we just right. kept referencing it. Every time they came to us, That's we're like, right. tired vaginas. Yes.
Our vaginas are so tired.
So by the way, if you want some like really amazing panelists, we're That's up right. for grabs. Yes.
You can book us. Book us at
Seagull. Book us
My self-care, you know, the most simple one, which, you know, people be like, well, that's easier said than done. I mean, I think I've spent a tremendous amount of energy. I'm sorry, these are supposed to be fast.
That's fine.
The practice of non-attachment, and I mean that in the least, like, esoteric way possible. And that is simply that I genuinely choose not to suffer.
In, like, the moment?
In everything, as much to the extent that is ever possible. I think I spent so much of my life suffering in different ways. And I think I really see it. And I think if you're empathic and you kind of walk the world with a kind of an open heart, I think you just feel it in almost everybody, from barista to the person you walk by on the street. And so to your, you know, Lyft driver. At least always moving towards non-attachment is the probably better way to say it.
Trying to make that choice. Mm-hmm. It's empowering. Mm-hmm. Everything you do is empowering. I love this. Mm-hmm. You guys, she was amazing, isn't she? I mean, you answered so many scientific questions that, like, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I have to get back to you on the corpse thing, though.
I know, and we're going to talk about it because I am fascinated. I feel like it's like a whole world, like you explain. Thank you for breaking it down mm-hmm. for me, who I know just doesn't necessarily have a handle on it. And thank you for being so open and fun. And you guys, don't forget, she's going to do her personal practice, which is actually a really cool thing. I love mm-hmm. it. And if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Also, go to our closed Facebook group for more conversation and stay tuned for her personal practice. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now Ara is going to lead us in her personal practice, which is something she calls hands up and hands down.
Yes, it's not a dance, actually. And it remind me of Club Med. So actually, I chose the most visual thing that, of course, for a podcast, probably not ideal. But the idea that I think in many of my yoga classes over the years, I've had teachers that when you're in Shavasana kind of offer the opportunity for you to have your kind of hands up, which would be receiving, and hands down, which I guess is kind of a practice of preserving or self-love. And so one of the things I often do, particularly like in meetings, although a lot of people don't notice it because it's usually under the table, by myself or in my mind, sometimes I don't always do it exactly physically, is when I'm in a meeting or I'm going through life, something comes up, I make a very conscious choice of if it's something that I want to let in, and I usually take the meeting, like at least one hand is up, or if it's something that I feel or I can already tell is going to feel incredibly depleting or may not serve me, whether it's that day, may have nothing to do with the person, or like last night was up my entire night with my three-year-old, I put my hands down. And it's just a way of like kind of being self-aware in the moment of knowing kind of what feels right and what lets in. I find that in what I do for work, and actually I once had a Chinese medicine practitioner tell me not to take a lot of meetings in a single day just because you really have to be so careful about what you give out. And I've always thought about that. I can't say it's impacted my calendar as much as I would like it to, but I at least use this practice to kind of at least like attune myself to kind of whether or not, and I particularly think as women, you end up offering help and to do things a lot, to be in service. And I really just try and use my hands to kind of just like be a compass for what that kind of feels like in any given moment and what I should be offering. Cause I'm the person that, you know, has a history of offering too much. And then as a result, kind of feeling fairly depleted by it. So hands up, hands down.
Dentalk's podcast would not exist without these incredible people, Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek, and music by Alex Fetter. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't subscribed, please do. And also, wherever you listen, please go and leave us a review. It's so greatly appreciated. It really does help us out. If you want to keep talking about all this stuff, please join our community on our secret Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search Den Talks Podcast, and join us there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.